Welcome to Into the Hobbyverse, a podcast dedicated to Marvel Crisis Protocol and the aspects of the hobby surrounding it. Our focus here is to discuss our experiences with hobbying within the game and to help give advice to you, the listener, to help you improve to where you want to be on your painting journey. I am Waxy Sandwich, and I am joined, as ever, by Ori Artist. How's it going, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I guess we're still in the midst of mini extravaganza as we record this. I suppose when people are listening to it, it'll be a little bit after. But a lot of exciting stuff. Not as many new models as I, you know, for my taste. I find all the rules and cards distasteful on my tongue. But the models that they've shown off have been exciting, and you know, their cadence of kind of revealing models is interesting. How they like. Okay, here's the the CAD render or whatever it actually is. Then here's a painted version. Then here's a staged picture. It's kind of interesting, to see that as they kind of reveal the physicality of the model rather than the rules. So that's been cool. So we got to see more of the those new X-Men. A little bit far out, though, which I guess is where I was going with this. It's hard to reveal new models when the stuff already on the docket is already 6 months away.
Right, yeah. I like the way they do it with, like, showing kind of the 3D render, because you get an idea of, like, ooh, okay, so that's what the model is going to be, you know, its kind of shape, right? But then seeing it painted always reveals a lot more. And so I always like that to be the next step. I actually think that's really cool, because it makes it to where even when, for instance, the last time, I think it was Adepticon, that they had showed pictures of, like, Professor X and Shadow King, and that you got to see the 3D render, but they weren't painted yet. And so you kind of get an idea of what the model is going to be like or whatever. This time you get to see them painted, and it just reveals that much more detail about the model. So I appreciate that sense of doing it, but yeah, it is kind of weird, because for instance, I have this piece that I want to do for Path of the Worthy, and it requires Iceman, and I have no idea. Like, I know he's coming. I've seen the model now fully painted, and I have technically until like March of next year to get him in my hands and get him added to, the project and painted up. And I have no idea if I'm going to be able to make it, because I genuinely do not know when he releases. And it's a little awkward that, like, we have the rules for Shadow Cat, and we know what both Shadow Cat and Iceman look like painted up. And, you know, it's 50-50. We could have gotten the rules for Iceman instead. And so it is a little awkward that it's like, the release schedule and the teaser schedule is stretched out the way that it is.
Well, and this is, I mean, like, there's a lot of it going on, but this is definitely where I should stay on my lane. You mentioned the card reveals. I think it's wild the card reveals so early, because people will just, like, proxy these cards and play with it, like, all these characters, like, 9 months before they release. And then the character will actually release, and they'll be like, oh, I'm so burnt out from lack of new content. And it's just like you've been playing with the new content for 9 months or whatever.
Oh, interesting.
So it's weird to me. And I guess, with the new core box, it's probably kind of like, that takes a lot of time and is a very condensed set of releases. So it's interesting to me, like the last mini extravaganza, they were kind of like, with Hulkbuster, they were like, oh, we really need to reduce the time from spoilers to actually getting the model out there in people's hands. This is like one of their stated goals. And then I think the new core box kind of threw that off, because they're kind of back to that 6 month range. But hopefully it's earlier. Yeah, certainly. So you can incorporate it into your piece.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, too, because I know Shatterpoint, of course, became a thing, and so I'm wondering how much of that came down to, like, for a while there, it felt like we were a little starved for, like, what's coming, and so I'm wondering if it had to do with, like, well, we got to give them something, and the next stuff that's coming out doesn't come out for a while, and we want the core set to be a big surprise, and so the only thing they really had to show us was, like, X-Men stuff that doesn't come out till next year kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, but even for Shatterpoint, right? Like the releases, like it feels like there's not much left in the year. I guess I'm a lot less in tune with that release schedule because I'm just kind of looking at the shelves when I see them, I'll get them. But yeah, I feel like all the stuff that they revealed is also like kind of in the same time frame. I mean, nothing wrong with it. It's just so like instead of doing their AMG schedule, they're actually doing like a normal gaming company release schedule. So it's not like it's a disaster or anything. It's just interesting.
Yeah. I guess it's not like either of us are experts on this, nor is this like a big complaint. It's just it's just kind of amusing. Of like, it's a little weird. But it's an interesting point you brought up about like spoiling the rules so early. I never really thought of that. That like. There are people that will absolutely, they've already got like a 3D sculpt of the character or something like that. That are just what is it, Tabletop Simulator or whatever?
Yeah.
They're gonna already be playing with that character on Tabletop Simulator. And by the time the character comes out, it's kind of old news for them. It's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, it comes from like my competitive outlet is Magic, right? So they'll be these cards that people will see, and if they're ultra competitive, they'll play with it, and then they're like, nothing new's happened in so many months. But it's like, no, it has. It's just you are playing with it on a different time frame, so your ability to complain is maybe keep it in perspective before
figure
that out. I don't know.
Well, thank God we're more on the hobby end and we don't have to worry as much.
Yeah,
about
I can't, although I don't know, like if I could get like a bootleg copy of Shadow King, because you're right, like I guess to bring us back on track, back into our lane, you mentioning seeing the painted models. I know they showed off Shadow King before, but I never like got a really good look at it until I was watching the most recent stream. And man, I am so pumped to paint that model. That model looks very sick.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I all the models they revealed, I think look pretty great. The new Asgardians, I think, look like they're going to be a ton of fun to paint.
Oh yeah.
Although, I'm probably going to be super done with Lightning by the time I'm done with them. and then like the I finally get to see the painted spider foes. That's also really exciting. Shang-Chi.
I'm so pumped for Shang-Chi. Sorry, I'm cutting you off because I'm just so excited. I'm pumped for these two models. I don't know why. I don't have like a big love for Shang-Chi. The movie was okay, but man, Shang-Chi and Silver Sable, that's got me jives. That Silver Sable model is sick.
Yeah, I the thing I'm excited for Silver Sable is I know I want to try to really capture the reflective kind of silver nature of the suit. And that's going to be challenging, right? Because you're essentially going to be trying to make it look, non-metallic metal, but not. And I think that's going to be an interesting challenge. But I think they're cool looking sculpts. The last two characters I was expecting to come out for some reason. I don't know why it didn't occur to me. But like that one for me was totally out of left field. It was like, Oh, Silver Sable. All right.
Yeah, it's weird because I think I've talked about this before. You kind of have an idea of who they're thinking about,
right?
Based off the card art. So Silver Sable's on like several cards, so it's coming, but you never know when. Shang-Chi is surprising because I don't know how many cards he's actually on, but I think he's gotten enough cultural real estate where.
Especially with the movie out, like
at
this point, I would be surprised if they don't at some point drop Eternals and. Pretty much any other character we've seen,
I don't know. We're just turning into like a Marvel fan cast here, but I'm not super excited about if they do Eternals, because they really stick more to the comic book. Comic book Eternals are doofy looking. They're just kind of like,
fair.
They're all like the same character in a different color suit. I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the world. I'm sure they do it well, but they're not.
In fairness though, I do think sometimes they like kind of blend genre a little bit. So like Punisher, for instance, doesn't look like his comic counterpart. He really looks more of like a, I don't know, like in yeah, or like a Thomas Jane, like the one from the with John Travolta as the bad guy. It has very much that vibe to it, and it feels more movie influenced than it does comic influenced. And so I feel like sometimes they try to ride that line where they're like, you know, like Baron Mordo, I think is one where he looks very much like the character
they did that one explicitly. They wanted to do. Yeah, I think that's they said that is like this is explicitly like that MCU scene where he's jumping around in the training montage with Doctor Strange.
Right, right. So I feel like they could lean more into the movies and give you a less kind of dorky looking version of the comics. But then again, they could just full on like that Loki model, right? I'm super excited about that one. I think that's going to be a blast to paint. And that's like leaning hard into like comics, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's doing it more for you than me. I think it's a cool model. I'm more excited for this Thor because my dream of having that you know, the Gore comic book run where it's the three Thors squaring off against Gore is, I think I can execute on it now because now I have a young Thor. You know, you obviously have the middle Thor, and then I think I could convert an old Thor. So I think after he comes out, I could actually get that, like, that trio picture I've talked about before.
Interesting. Ooh, speaking of models, I'm way more excited now about Gwenom than I was before. Like, when I just saw kind of the 3D sculpt, it was like, okay, yeah, it looks neat. But seeing it painted up, it's much more impressive. So that one and Scarlet Spider, I think I'm really jazzed for those ones. I'm really excited to paint those ones. So,
yeah, I don't know if I have a view on those. I guess I have to look at them again. They were cool to see painted. I guess it was like not doing as much for me. The Gwenom will be interesting because you'll get to use a lot of colors. Like I'm definitely planning on doing like a deep magenta up through like a pink on that. So I guess I'm excited for that opportunity.
Especially because it's a symbiote, right? So there's all kinds of room there to play around with, like chromatic black and different color recipes and color influences. Like you could do so much with that.
Yeah, definitely a lot of exciting stuff on the hobby in the future. But maybe we should be a little reflective and get on with the podcast. So what have you been up to? What have you painted?
Well, I've only really had a chance to paint two things. The first one, I was partially done with it when we recorded our last episode, and that was, I mentioned that we're doing this Domain of Mirza Noctis game, which is essentially like kind of a Castlevania board game, so to speak. And I was painting up Jelson Derek, the witch hunter guy from Warhammer Quest, Cursed City.
Yes.
And I finally got done with him, so I threw a picture of him up, and I tried to do that kind of Cursed City, like lit from underneath in red kind of thing. And I just swung for the fences and leaned really hard into it, so it's not at all subtle. While also trying to give him a lot of normal detail, so I wanted to I kind of did that thing where. Realistically, he shouldn't be lit this way, right? Because in order for the red to be that intense, it would have to be really dark outside.
Then the other details wouldn't be as...
And the other details would look like it's at night kind of thing. And I tried to have my cake and eat it too, basically, and have a really bright red light coming from underneath, but also having it look like it's day. I kind of looked at it as like rule of cool. I don't want it to look like that he just doesn't have much detail and it's all at night kind of thing because I don't know. I want you to see kind of like the detail as if you were lit during the day, but I also wanted the cool, like, you know, eerie glow coming from underneath red kind of thing. And I realize that's not realistic and you could probably criticize the bejesus out of it, and it would probably hurt me if this were like a paint competition, but I wanted the rule of cool to kind of win out in this case, so I said screw it and just ran with it.
And I think that's where we like kind of talked about it before is like, yeah, you know, it doesn't work from the like realism painting and like setting the scene perfectly, but it sets the scene it does look cool. And I think that what you're saying about like having the details be conveyed on the other parts of the model is, you know, more important for a gaming type piece. So I don't think I would actually criticize that. Yeah, I don't, I think it's great. Looks cool.
Thanks. Yeah. No, I'm pretty happy with it. I think it's also it's a little less try hardy as far as paint jobs go. My
Yeah.
main focus was on trying to make sure that the red showed up and came across and was distinguished from everything else. So it was a lot of fun to paint. It was at times a little tedious just in picking out all the little detail. But I mainly just wanted to see kind of could I do it? Is it something I could pull off and it sell the effect? And so I'm pretty happy with how it came out overall.
Yeah, I think it works.
Yeah. And so there's him. And then the other thing I
Oh,
painted
yes.
is I am working on the Spider-Man versus Doc Ock rival panel set. And thus far, I'm not very far into it. I just finished up Spider-Man, with the exception of the base. So I've done the explosion, but I haven't done the rest of the base, and I haven't done like the little rocks that are coming off the explosion. And the reason I've left those unfinished is because I was going to do this part, and then I'm going to do Doc Ock, and then I'm going to do the display
Okay.
piece that they go on. And when I do that, that's going to determine like what color recipes I would need for their bases, and that's when I'll actually knock out like the
I
base
was going
part.
to ask, are you going to do the whole thing? So yes.
Yes, yeah. So I want to lean into it and try to do like the whole display piece, and I guess I'll view this as kind of a, because one of the things I think hurt me at AdeptCon when I was in the Worthy is that as much work as I put into building my display board, I just didn't, there were too many parts of the base that didn't receive the same amount of detail. And so I want to kind of use this as a chance to practice trying to pay the base that much detail, because I think that'll be a good kind of exercise to kind of grow as a painter, is to give that the same love I give models, which I tend not to do. So that's where I'm at with that. But in the meantime, I painted Spider-Man, and I did a kind of a trick with him. I took a risk. I did a big gamble
All
with
right,
him.
let's hear it. Yeah.
So I thought about it, and I was like, well, in the idea of experimenting with color recipes, what do red and blue have in common?
What do red and blue have in common? They're primaries.
That's true. They are primaries. Not the answer I'm looking for, but it is a correct answer.
They don't occur, well, red does occur naturally in nature. Blue is very rarely occurring naturally in nature in that quite level of intensity.
I love you're gonna find like 20 different answers that are
Yeah,
not the one
well,
I'm looking
I know. I feel like I'm taking an
for.
exam. I'm starting to flop sweat here. You have to give me the answer.
Yeah, so if you combine them, what color do you get?
Oh, sure, purple, right?
Yeah. So I was like, you know what I'm gonna try doing? And I had no idea if this was gonna be a good idea or not. This could completely blow up my face, but I took like a dark violet and I just painted the entirety of Spider-Man violet. And then
Okay,
I just
yeah.
layered up into red and layered up into blue, because I wanted there to be kind of a color harmony. Like, and I was hoping it would be subtle enough to where you don't look at it and go, why did you paint Spider-Man purple? Right? But not so subtle that you don't feel the color influence. I have no idea if it succeeded or not, but I really like how it came out. It's actually one of the most proud reds I've ever done. Like I managed to get it like all the way to white on the highlights, while still feeling red, so I didn't run into that problem where it turns pink or orange or whatever. And then I also try to use the white parts of the highlights to make it look more kind of shiny and reflective. I tried to pull that off with the suit, and so I was really happy with how the red came out, and then I was also really happy with the amount of detail that I was able to get out of the blue. And I think one of the potential downsides to this is I don't know if it's as punchy as like some of the other reds or blues that I've done, and I think that might be because of relying on that purple base coat.
Well, so I think you can have it both ways. So you saying that, we were talking about it before, and you were trying to see if I could see it. You may be able to see it in hand. I can't see it in the photo that we have here, but I think I would actually have a little bit of that purple showing. I think if you glaze, so I think you can have it both ways. I think if you, in the bottom like third to one fourth of the shadows, like that kind of core of the shadow area, I think if you glaze a little bit of that purple back in into the blue and red, and I just mean like one to two glazes just to like reinforce that interesting colored shadow, I think that would look good. And then you can still have that punchy red by in the top, in the top third to one fourth, like having that really saturated punchy red and blue. I think that that'll kind of achieve what you're worried about, where you get that color harmony. I think that's a really clever idea, and I actually like that quite a bit. Like you get that color harmony and you can get that in the shadows, and that'll look good because that'll look a little bit more atmospheric, right? It won't necessarily read as purple, but mm-hmm. you can still get that comic book color in the highlights by glazing up that more saturated red / blue. But I don't know, your highlights do look good. Like I don't think you need to do too much more to implement that. Or you can leave it as it is. It's like if you wanted to show that purple a little bit more, you could do that. But I don't know if you necessarily need to. If that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I will say the picture doesn't do it the best justice. In person, I feel like the purple does, it does read more. So, and this was a very amateurish pick where I just pulled out my phone and snapped a pic under my desk lamp, and it's not the normal photo setup I would take. So,
which is totally fair. Like I'm not,
sure. Yeah. Yeah. So
this is soft critique based off the photo. It's
right. Right. Yeah. Let me, I'll grab a better pick at some point and show them off, and you can kind of give me your take on it. But no, I think that's a fair point that like, the purple reading more, I think definitely helps it. And I think that this is just one of those many, many examples of where the photo is not helping me.
Yeah, one of the joys I've learned about like after going to Nova is like I just like looking at minis so much better when they're in person. Not that that's obviously realistic for everything, but it's so right. much easier to see that level of nuance and detail that everyone that builds in than a photo, particularly like the quick work in progress photos.
Right. Yeah. Well, especially when you can like move the mini around, right? Because you can see, you get a much better feel for the model when you can do that than when you're just having to go off of like a fixed angle kind of thing. It's kind of the idea of like people painting for box art. That's one of the things that Dallas talked about when he was talking about the Path of the Worthy stuff during Mini Extravaganza. He was talking about like how different that process is when you're painting for box art, because you're explicitly painting for just like one angle is all you care about. Like the rest of the model does not matter. It's just, did you get it from that angle kind of thing? And it's that's the problem, right? Is that most of us, when we're painting, we're not painting for one angle. We're painting for, it being on a tabletop and moving around and you're playing games with it kind of thing. And so it kind of drastically changes the way you go about painting.
It's funny. There's this guy, Moses Yao, who is. See if I can find a picture of his model while I'm talking. Yeah, Moses Yao is kind of a newer. I'm sure he's been painting for a while, but he's been posting on Facebook a lot more recently. And this guy just paints like truly phenomenal pieces. Here, I have a photo. Let me drop that in the episode gallery. So like this is one that like I have saved and I just aspire to like paint like this. Oh, actually, this is a bad example. Oh well, but you can look at it. So for a lot of his stuff, he just does not paint the back of the model at all. It is primer white. But he gets these like really beautiful shots because he's focusing on that. Okay, I'm displaying it in this picture from this angle. So why would I paint the back of it? know, that's very similar to the box art. And like, that's true with display minis. It kind of depends on what you think is the outcome of your art. Some people think that the picture is the outcome of the art, and some people think, or, you know, view it as the actual model itself is the outcome, or is the artistic outcome.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to that kind of age-old lesson we're always kind of reiterating, which is that whatever you should do with your model is entirely dependent on what you want to do with the model, right? Like, what are you painting for? Tabletop plus, just to get it painted, you know, competition, photograph, relax, whatever. Yeah. This and so it's an interesting to see that perspective, because clearly based on the photo you had posted, like, this person is a phenomenal painter. Like,
yeah, just cow. Yeah.
And the idea, like, if you would have told me, like, oh, hey, some of these models you're going to see from this guy, he doesn't even bother painting the back of the model. I'd be like, what? No way. And it makes sense, though, like, because he's not painting it. You know, I mean, this one even has a backdrop, so it would make perfect sense to just ignore parts of the back of the model if all you're going to do is present it to be seen from, like, that angle. It's an absolutely rational thing to do, but it's not something I would think about, you know, so it's interesting.
Yeah. I'm too much of a gamer. I want to paint it from every angle, but
right.
All right. Well, yeah, it looks good. Excited to see that. I've been wanting to paint the, it's like that, I think it's Oscorp like kit. I think it's supposed to be, so it'll be cool to see what you do with it and see them battling together.
Rival yeah
are very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to get them painted up. I think it's gonna be fun. But that's all I've done for the past week or so.
Cool. So I'll let's see. I've got two things. I'll start with a shorter thing. I finished off my Shatterpoint. Not all of my stuff, but I've got enough I can actually play like a game with. So I, you know, had to spend the time, I had to eat my vegetables, paint the base rims black, varnish everything, and then, you know, go back and repaint the base rims black. So, you know, like, there's finishing steps on all of my Shatterpoint models, which is always tedious, but now I can actually play the game and see if it's any good. I might try to do that at some point. That was it on Shatterpoint. The other big thing I hobbied on, I don't know if I talked about this last time or not, but I certainly wasn't done with it last time, so I painted a World War I Sheik soldier bust, and I am going to, so this is kind of for a competition. It's for a model show, which is, are you familiar with, like, the historical side of the hobby at all?
Only a little bit. I do have, like, some Flames of War, some Cruel Seas, and some Bolt Action. I had a friend I used to play with back before I moved who was really big into that side of it. And so I have some limited experience with it, but it's from a very casual gamer perspective.
So it's interesting to me that there's this whole other aspect of the hobby that is, you know, the historical focus side. And there, you know, there's a decent chunk of people. Like, I think most major metropolitan areas and probably even some non-major metropolitan areas have like a scale soldier society or like a historical painter society. So I think IPMS is like the big one that's in the US. But they'll often do shows, like just annual shows where people will just put in what they've painted. And you know how people who focus on historicals engage with the hobby is way different than, you know, how people who come from more of a gaming background or, you know, kind of do the more sci-fi fantasy type display models, like, you know, you'd expect engage with the hobby. So it's really interesting, like, people are into the same thing effectively, but just how different it is and how disconnected, like, the two ecosystems are. Like, I only kind of heard about this the seedy underbelly of miniature hobby by almost by chance. Last year I went to DC/Northern Virginia has an annual show. I think it's the National Capital Scale Soldier Model Society, so NCMSS. They have an annual show that I went to last time just to like kind of observe and walk around, and I was like, oh, this is actually cool. So it's different than a painting competition. You kind of just put your, like, you sign up, it's like $5 extra to like have a little section for you. And you just kind of put stuff up that you've painted, and they do the open judging system where you get gold, silver, bronze. I'm sure each show is different, but this one you get gold, silver, bronze based off your placing as an open system. But it's like a lot more casual than a formal painting competition. Like, you kind of just, you know, enter stuff that you've worked on. It's really more of a model show than a painting competition. Even though, you know, there is an award ceremony at the end, but it's you know, they call it a show instead of a competition. There's very little on the line. So last year when I went, the other reason I liked it is it had a pretty nice vendor hall with stuff that's very different than something you'd see at like Nova. So, you know, at Nova you get a lot of like gaming related stuff. Here it's a lot more like model kits, soldier kits, etc. So I got a couple like display kits, and one of them was this World War II soldier bust. Or sorry, World War I soldier bust. So I got it last year. I thought it'd be like a nice little simple model. It was like $15 or whatever. So I just got it. I thought it was cool. And this year I was like, okay, I want to actually paint something for this and then enter some of the similar stuff I painted for Nova. So I painted this World War I soldier bust for the model show. So that it was kind of fun to paint something that's like very outside my standard fare. You know, I don't get so much the historical stuff, but it's nice to kind of paint a World War I soldier. It's weird how they judge it. From my understanding, is they really emphasize historical accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
That's why, like, you know, that's why Vallejo kind of has like World War I German uniform dark, World War I German uniform
medium. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I, you know, I kind of looked at some pictures of you know, Sheik soldiers in World War I. And I tried to match it as best I could, and I definitely took some artistic liberties. So we'll see what they say. But either way, I kind of like painting it. I definitely try to push myself on like, okay, this is where the lighting is coming from. I tried to be very deliberate. I thought a lot about like he's facing off to the left, and I thought it would be an interesting lighting scheme is if you get that 3/4 lighting coming from the way he's facing, but angled in such a way where, you know, a bit of the shadow is facing towards the viewer. I thought that would create some pretty interesting lighting. I kind of wish I had leaned into it a little bit more. I maybe have chickened out some, but I like how it looks. And then I you know, if they're really going after realistic freedom, I saw a, or not realistic freedom, I took some artistic liberty with his head wrap. So I saw a stamp where some guy was in a decorative uniform. It was a World War I soldier, and he had these like blue lines across the wrap. And the soldier's uniform is pretty boring. It's like a yellow ochre. So I was like, well, this sucks and is boring. So I was I saw that and I was like, okay, let me try to do that. So I kind of tried to freehand in like some I don't know what you would call that, some embellishment onto his head wrap. So I'll probably get dinged on that from historical accuracy, and it's not super tidy. I struggled with it a bit, and I probably would do it differently if I repainted it. But yeah, that's who I painted, or that's what I painted.
Yeah, no, I have kudos, man. I think it looks really good. I have yet to kind of just buckle down and paint a bust. It's on my bucket list, but I'm super impressed with it. Like this, the detail and the subtlety of everything. Like, it looks really good. Like, I'm curious because when I see this stuff, I'm always, I don't know. I guess I look at it from the perspective of somebody who's only painted like the smaller scale stuff, right? Like, I've never. I think MCP is like the largest scale of anything I've ever painted, and so. You know, I look at like the detail you got, for instance, like on his eye and under his eye, on that unlit side of his face, and then just kind of the smoothness of transitions and stuff like that. Do you find that you're able to get kind of a smoother paint job like it's easier to achieve when you're working with their bust, or do you find that it's harder to pull off and you have to put in more time to make it happen because those same details are on like a larger surface area?
That's a good question. I don't know, because I look at it and it's not particularly smooth compared to you know, what other people do at this scale. It is certainly easier than you know, a MCP size figure, right? Like you don't have to worry about it as much. Glazing, I find, is a lot easier at this scale for me. Getting you know, when I glaze for MCP, it's very much like, okay, I glaze the entire area. Here it's very easy to like, okay, I'm going to glaze right before the Terminator of the shadow and add some saturation there. And that helps blend stuff together a little bit more. So I find that easier. So I guess the answer is yes, I do find it easier at this scale.
Interesting. Because I just noticed when I look at it, I'm just like, wow, like there's so much detail in that. And it like the transitions all feel like natural and smooth, and it doesn't look painted, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think, like, you know, is that serendipity? Is that part of when you're painting a bust, it's easier to pull that off? I had always kind of wondered.
Yeah, I think it's easier than a 32 millimeter model. And part of what you get with a bust is you get away with a little bit more, right? Like, it's give or take, because you need to add in more like details and nuance, right, than if you're painting like a standard face on a like a GW model. Like, I added in some moles or whatever. Like, I tried to add in more musculature details, right? So you have to worry about that more. But adding in those elements helps blend it together more as well, because it creates more visual confusion and your brain kind of smooths it over more. So you have to do more, but in the effort of doing more, it helps you out. So I don't know. It's a little bit of a give and take. Like, I found the NMM on the buttons to be like incredibly easy, whereas like on something smaller scale, like that would be harder to get that much color nuance in there that I was able to do. Like, I kind of have like the palette reflecting off a button. I kind of have the yellow reflecting off a button, and then just like the standard light. But you know, a lot of that is the nuance. I think also it's like maybe the intentionality of it. Like, I knew that I was painting this for a show, so I was a little bit more intentional with stuff than if I'm painting something else.
Gotcha.
I don't know if that answers your question. I don't really know.
No. I mean, I think that answers my question. It sounds like when you're working with a larger kind of surface area in a larger scale, that, I mean, obviously you do have to pay more attention to smaller details, because those details wouldn't exist. Like, I don't think we have many MCP models where you can like see the bags under someone's
yeah.
eyes, right?
Yeah.
So you do have to pay attention to that stuff, but at the same time, like, because you're paying attention to it, like, there's more opportunities to just kind of make the transition smoother, and then of course adding in like the little embellishments that you're talking about. Like, no, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting question if we ever got someone on who like has been doing display type stuff, or I keep saying display stuff. I need to get away from that word. I want to go on a quick aside, because display type stuff implies like there's a level of quality that it needs to achieve before it's the display model, and that's not true. Like, if you're painting it to display it, it's a display model. So I need to get away from that. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, stuff at this scale to the quality of paint job, people have done that more. I'd be curious to hear what they would say, because it is an interesting question. Like, do you find it easier or harder? I found it easier to try to like get to this point than other models I painted.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm entering that show. I'm just going to bring a couple of things and this bust and see how it goes. I want to be shattered. There's a best bust award, and my ego is just going to be, you know, at an all time low if I don't win that. So
Ooh, careful. You don't want to don't want to pull a me at Adepticon.
I don't know. There was a lot of good stuff there last year. So I don't actually anticipate doing all that well. But yeah, excited to go. It was fun last time. It's fun this year. If anyone is in the Northern Virginia area, it's September 30th. Look up NCMSS. It's a good time. At the very worst, they've got a nice vendor hall. So, you know, you can always buy stuff like random bus and stuff. Like, I got a bunch of weird like bus that I probably wouldn't have been able to find online from the vendor hall. All right, so that's what I painted. So moving to the main topic, in the spirit of mini extravaganza, we thought we would kind of talk about, or at least try to talk about, something semi-topical. So, you know, it's kind of a twofer in a way. So we're talking about Daredevil and Bullseye. So one of these is getting updated with this mini extravaganza, and the other one got updated with a previous mini extravaganza.
So he did, didn't he? I forgot about that. Yeah.
So it's a rare box where if you buy it, you can immediately throw away the two cards that come with it. They're total worthless garbage now. joking. Well, I guess I'm not joking. I mean, that's kind of true.
I like having, especially because if you're just going to print cards, I don't want them to be all flimsy.
You can just mess like the card stock. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. That's what I do. So I still think the card has value, albeit less.
Yeah. So we're talking about Daredevil and Bullseye. That's on our docket today. Now that Daredevil has been upgraded to a leader, we can talk about him and check off a box, and it's kind of a fun box. Yeah, so these are two relatively simple models, but they were a lot of fun for me to paint. I don't know who you wanted to start with.
It doesn't matter to me. I think both of them are great sculpts. I'll say that. The detail on the models is really, really well done. I'm excited to see Daredevil like on tables more, because personal opinion, the Netflix Daredevil show, I think, is probably some of the best live-action superhero stuff that's ever been made. And that
show is really good.
And I always thought it was kind of a shame that, his roles were considered by the community to be kind of lackluster, and you just didn't see a lot of him. And then he was kind of overshadowed by the Shadowlands Daredevil. And that always made me kind of sad. So I'm excited to see the changes, and I hope that results in a lot of people playing him more often. You get to see more painted up Daredevils running around. So I guess with that, let's start with him.
Yeah, we kind of already have. Yeah. So, I think that this sculpt's pretty cool. He's kind of the OG jumping off he's a OG jumping off a rock character. I like the baton swirling around, like it's got a lot of movement to it, and it for how wobbly it is, I do feel it's pretty well like machined and executed. Mm-hmm. Like it's never kind of felt close to breaking for me, although I'm sure it's broken for some other people, and it is a piece that kind of gives me some anxiety. But do you want to talk about like the ways to like modify that if you're worried about it breaking?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've seen some people that did have a break, and I was kind of surprised by that, because I've always found it to be actually surprisingly sturdy, where I was like kind of surprised when other people had that issue. I was like, wow, that's strange. But one of the things I've seen people do that either didn't like the kind of twirly, baton rope spinning around them kind of thing, or it broke for them and they needed to do something to fix it, is it's probably one of the easiest conversions you can do. You just snip off the rope bits. So just take clippers, snip it at where the rope meets the batons, and then just glue the baton piece into his open hand. You're pretty much done. Like, that's the conversion. Yeah. And now he's got his two batons and you're good. And I was always blown away by how easy a conversion that is, and how good it looks. Like it totally pulls off. Like, there he is. He's got his two batons. Like, Granted, he's not connecting him with a rope anymore at that point. I guess if you wanted to, you could, like, I don't know, take some type of string or wire or whatever and connect them, like, straight across, maybe, if you wanted to do something like that. But simple conversion looks really good, and it gets rid of that kind of wobbliness if that's something that is a problem for you for whatever reason.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing you could do if you want to be lore accurate is you can glue the one baton to the top of the other and have it just be kind of the retracted baton before he separates it.
Mm.
So you kind of have a longer baton in one hand. I think that that's another option. If, cause I, you know, one of the only like trepidation I have about that is his other hand doesn't really look like it's grasping it supernaturally. So right. It can look a little bit awkward. Not that, you know, that's definitely one of those things where, like, if you look at it for so long, it starts to look weird. At a glance, I think it's totally fine. So you could kind of glue one baton to the other to make it longer as another option. But you have some options to kind of adjust the length of the baton.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could see that bugging you if you're really spending time kind of looking at it. But on a surface level, just as a tabletop mini, I think it looks fine.
Yeah. So yeah, and I guess what we're on the more like conversion side of the hobby. The other thing that people have changed a lot is kind of the gravestone that he's jumping off of. Or leaning into the gravestone. So I guess you have two approaches. One, you can kind of be lean into he's jumping off the. Is it a gravestone or is it a stained glass window? Because I've heard people call it two other things. I guess we both painted it as a gravestone.
I always saw it as a gravestone, but now that you mention it, like looking at kind of the details on it, I could see that being a stained glass window. Actually, it's a little odd if that is indeed what it. Yeah, because it's even got like cracks.
Yeah, you know what? It probably is a gravestone. Interesting. I guess you could do it either way, but we'll go with gravestone. So, you know, you can kind of fill the area around it with dirt and kind of get it off the city street a little bit, which is kind of what I wish I did. I put dirt around it, but I wish I had done more of that so that it looks more like, you know, it's kind of weird. He's jumping off a gravestone in the ground in the middle of the street.
Right. Trying to
blend that more into the scenery a little bit.
Yeah, it's. I feel the same. Looking at it, it's like, and this kind of goes back to a big regret I have of a lot of my older minis, is I didn't put much effort into the base or into integrating them, the base, or like their tactical rocks or whatever into the base. And with Daredevil, that sticks out big time because it's a gravestone, and why is that sticking out of a city street? And so I don't know. Were I to do another one, I would definitely focus on that. I would want to make that just look better. And I have no idea what I would do. I mean, you've got the little trash can that comes. You could always have them jumping off the trash
can. Oh, yeah, I was going to say the trash can. Kind of build a little wall out of, like, bricks or green stuff and have them jumping off of that.
Yeah, yeah. There's you know, probably an infinite number of options, the ways you could go about doing this. But I think that's something I would intentionally do, or just lean into the graveyard thing, and like you said, just basically redo the top of his base with tactical dirt, if you will,
yeah.
And then put like grass tufts and all that stuff. I would either lean into that, or probably remove the gravestone part of it to begin with.
Yeah, I think either way you go, it's fine. I guess it's not like too bad if you just kind of have it sitting around. It's just a little funny, I guess. Something fun to point out. But I mean, it's definitely like fitting with his character, right? Like the kind of jumping around the gravestones. I guess it's a bit of the is Catholic, right? Catholic iconography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very in theme. Like you can't fault it for that.
So yeah, I mean that's kind of like what I have on the modeling side. I don't think you like need to do all too much more on the character. He's a pretty tight model, and not a ton of converting you can do. But yeah. So then painting. I mean, we both did the red. We'll just mention it. there are, you know, other color schemes for Daredevil. There's kind of the what is it, yellow and black?
Oh, okay. Right, yeah. The yellow and black one, yellow and red, of course.
Yellow and red, okay. That's probably the one I'm thinking of.
I think there is a yellow and black now that you mention it, but I mean, I'm no expert at that by a mile, but I'm not a fan of the yellow personally, because my understanding of his character is that he's one of these characters that was something else until a really good writer got a hold of him and like reimagined the character. And I want to say it was Frank Miller that did it to him, where he used to be like a kind of silly Golden Age comic character where he's like, oh, look at me, I'm running along rooftops and I have no fear. And it wasn't he wasn't a particularly compelling character. And then he got reimagined and they made him, you know, the devil at Hell's Kitchen. And they brought in like the Catholic faith and him kind of battling with, you know, how do I be a vigilante and not go too far? And what does that say about, you know, what does God think of that? All that stuff. And that's kind of what made him the kind of fan favorite character that he is now. Right. Is that re-envisioning? And my understanding is that when they did that, that's when they switched over to like the all red outfit and they didn't really do the yellow thing anymore. And so, I've always thought the yellow part of the outfit, I don't know, to me it looks silly. I'm not a fan of it. But, you know, each their own. Like, it's your model, paint it how you want to. But I prefer the kind of all red, I don't know, maybe the Netflix adaptation has too big a hold on my heart on this topic. But I just really
like
the
all red. Well, I was about to say, the Netflix is a bit... It's different, right? Because it's like black and red on the Netflix version.
It has kind of like black undersuit stuff to it, right? Like it's still red, but it's got like, for instance, like the mesh or the cloth stuff that's like underneath the cowl. That stuff is black and things like that, but it's still, I don't know. It's red in every way that matters, I guess. If you wanted to go through and like do, you know, make it look like the little parts kind of underneath the armor plates and stuff like that is black. To me, it still reads as red, though. So
yeah, it's just like all red versus mostly red and black.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, so you have some options on like how to paint it. And, you know, again, I think we talked about this with Spider-Man, where you don't have to worry about it so much as with other... With Spider-Man, and then characters that keep the same silhouette but change the color scheme, is you don't have to do any type of conversion work or significantly less conversion work. It's really just kind of changing what color you're painting those elements.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, we're going to focus on the all red color scheme here. So I don't know. Do you want to talk about kind of your thoughts on painting him, what you did, and how you would change that now?
Sure, yeah. So for me, you know, it was interesting. I went into this and I was really worried about it being just super monochromatic and boring. That was my big worry going into painting him. And I just started going in and like messing around with reds and highlighting all the little bits and panels. And my personal experience was that like the detail they poured into the sculpt is so well done. I just had a blast painting him, and I just lost myself in the process of like picking out little, you know, panel bits with highlights and shading other little, you know, crevices and stuff like that. And by the time I was done with it, I had, you know, he looked fully red, but he had a lot of depth to the red. There was like plenty of places where it's dark and other places where it's got like highlight and, it just, I don't know, the whole experience for me was very just fun and relatively quick. Like it didn't take as long as you might fear that it would take, kind of thing. I don't know. I had a blast, and for me it just came very easy. And I really credit that to the sculpt. I think it's just because they did such a good job on all the little details on him. And it made it to where he's broken up enough that even though it's a monochromatic paint job, it doesn't, or a monochromatic palette, it doesn't feel boring to me. But I don't know. That was kind of my experience painting him.
Yeah, I mean, mine was very similar. I think that I was concerned about like the mono red, like how do you approach that, and you know, highlighting the details appropriately certainly breaks it up, as you're saying. And the other thing that I tried to go for was differentiating the materials a little bit more. So with like the D's on his chest and the belts and stuff, I tried, you know, I guess I didn't know at the time that I was doing this, but I tried to make those a little bit brighter to have them stand out. And, you know, the reason that that kind of works is because I'm trying to emphasize the difference in reflectivity of those materials. So like with the belt, I, you know, definitely went way more into the orange territory than I did the rest of the suit. And what I'm trying to, or was trying to imply there, was that the, you know, the belt is more reflective. I think I did that with the boots actually as well. Like those elements were more reflective than the standard armor plates. And then, like you said, because it's broken up enough, like making sure that I went in and reinforced those dark lined armor plates to kind of give it shape to the model. I'm looking at it. I missed a mold mine on its baton. Oh no.
Oof.
Yeah, that's brutal.
And that always hurts.
Oh man, this is a disaster.
That
oh, two
always
mold
hurts.
Mines. All right, I'll have to close that. Yeah, so I mean, that's what I did. It, I guess, I don't know. We've talked about painting red before, and I maybe it's been long enough that we could talk about it again. Like when I'm talking about going into the orange, and you kind of went more into white, do you want to talk about like the different ways you can highlight up red?
Yeah. Well, and I didn't know this at the time that I did Daredevil, but one of the ways I found that I enjoy painting red more now, because I have a better understanding of the color, and I get like, so what makes red frustrating to paint is that it's a very transparent color. Like it's you paint a thing red and you're going to see what's underneath it. Like unless you're, you know, globbing on very thick paint, right? You're going to see what's underneath it.
Yeah.
And
or
so,
you're painting with cadmium red and it's very
right,
strong. Yeah.
Right. And so now, at first, that can be very frustrating, right? Because it makes you feel like you need to put down a million coats in order to get it to look right. But later, the more you play with it, the more you start to realize that this is also a strength of the paint, that this actually allows you to do stuff with it that is harder to do with other paints. And so what I like doing now when I'm painting red is, for instance, I will add increasing amounts of, like, you know, I'll go up through either like an orange yellow or like a pink white. I'll do something along those lines to get to like a really bright, and the model will not look red by the time I'm done with this. Like it looks either pink or orange or something to that effect. But then you just go back through with like a very kind of bright, punchy, true red, or like a primary red color. And you just glaze over that, and you end up with, you get to kind of keep most of the depth that you just painted in with your highlights, but it still reads as red. Now, I then go in and do a little bit more highlighting, and this time I just am a little more conservative about the highlight placement. And I found that that gives you like a nice red, that it feels red and still is highlighted all the way to white kind of thing. So it has nice contrast to it, but it still reads to the eye as red. I really like doing stuff like that with red. Also, when you get into the shadows is a perfect opportunity to really create a lot of richness with red. That's when you can get into either using like browns or purples to give... just to give it more depth, to make it read differently. And it kind of has a similar effect of doing the highlights, where it adds adds contrast, essentially. You're deepening the shadows and giving them kind of more richness and adding like a color contrast. And so red has become a color that I really enjoy painting, even though I always feel like I'm still kind of, I don't know, battling to find a recipe I love, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know if I've ever painted red and been like, oh my God, yes, that's it. This is amazing. But I always enjoy the process of like playing with it and seeing if I can get something that I like the look of.
Yeah. I mean, I, I don't have anything to add. I think that's all really well said, and it's kind of exactly where I am at with the color and kind of how I think about it. Yeah, well said. And yeah, I mean, like that process, highlighting up, glazing it, it sounds tedious, but I think like once you're kind of, you know, in the thick of it or whatever, it really does kind of lighten up and, you know, teach you a lot about painting, and also, you know, it's more enjoyable than perhaps it sounds.
Yeah, I think red is definitely one of those colors where it's incredibly frustrating to learn in the beginning, and that's because it just has properties that are different than other
yeah,
colors.
And like, you know, a lot of the time in the, like when you say in the beginning, like I think about when I was painting red, I'm painting red over black primer, and it looks mm-hmm. like it looks like butt brown or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
like the underpainting really matters, and thinking about all that stuff.
Yeah, it really, I think it comes down to just the big lesson to learn with red is that translucency is there, and you can't pretend that it isn't. Mm-hmm. But once you accept that it's there, you can use it as a strength. You could take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, to just like kind of understand the pigments, like most of the reds that are going to be in artist paints, I keep benching cadmium red because it's kind of the only red that is kind of that true one coat red. But you're not going to get that in hobby paints because it's expensive and, you know, it's toxic, and they try to stay away from that. So yeah, just understanding like the pyrrole reds, the other types of reds are going to have that transparency property. Yeah, and you know, I guess another thing, we've mentioned this before, but it's been a while. If like natural shadows with red, is that this maybe the only thing that I would do differently is if you're going for more of that, you know, I guess it is now MCU, but like the Netflix show Daredevil, is you kind of want them to look a little bit more natural than comic booky. So one way to get that is to mix in like a little bit of black. So the Steve Garcia class I took at Nova, his kind of way that he was talking about painting red was, you know, he was starting with a black primer. You don't necessarily need to, but start with a dark base, block in the highlight colors with white or a bright color, glaze over the whole thing with red, and then mix in some green into your red, which will desaturate the red down and give you a really natural looking shadow, and then glaze that into the shadow colors, which will give you like an interesting natural looking shadow, and it'll give you a more realistic looking Daredevil if that's what you're going for.
Interesting. Green. So, that is not what I would have expected.
Yeah, well, so they're on the opposite sides of the color wheel, right? So you'll get, right. When you do that, you know, if you do a 50-50, you'll get like a black type color. If you do it mostly red, you'll get like a nice desaturated natural looking red. You know, and maybe you want to mix in a little bit of black depending on how bright your green is. But yeah, that's a fun trick to get really natural looking reds. Yeah, so I mean, that would be the only thing that I might think about differently on a Daredevil. I quite like the bright red look though, which is, I guess, obviously that's what I went with. Yeah. The other thing I wish I did more is kind of separate the D's out on his chest a little bit more. What one thing that you can do is when you're painting something that's so monochromatic like this is pick two versions of the same monochromatic color, right? So like, you know, maybe you have a napful red, or like just a middle red, and then maybe you have a red that's a little bit more like orange tinted. And then if there's, you know, an element that you want to look a little bit different, use those two different reds as your base to separate those. Then both being red will tie them together, but you know, depending on how far apart those two colors are, visibly, you can get a better, you can get some separation of those elements, which will be nice to have. And I kind of wish I did that more on the D's on his chest to get that. I think there I had a little bit of trouble with my brush control at the time, but I think something like that can really, really help a model that's monochromatic like this.
Yeah. And kind of in a similar line of thinking is just making sure you're picking out like all the different armor panels, and like with a model like this, the sculpt is helping you a lot because there's a ton of little detail. You've got, you know, his belt where he holds his batons. He's got, you know, his belt around his waist. He's got the D's. He's got the armor panels all over the place. You can really help break up a monochromatic model by letting the sculpt help you when they do a good job on it, right? So, I mean, obviously, if you're painting a model that's not very well sculpted and has ill-defined details, then this is going to fight you. But with a model like Daredevil, it's fortunate in that they're helping you a lot with the sculpt. And so take advantage of that, and that'll help kind of break up the monotony, and it makes the model feel kind of more differentiated.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so that's it on Daredevil. That's what I have. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. Although one thing that just occurred to me is I was looking at my model and I was like, oh man, I never went in and like painted his eyes. Mm. And then I remembered, wait a minute. Like he does the, and granted, this is, we're calling the Netflix version. So maybe this isn't the case in the comics, but in the Netflix version, he like, cause he's blind, he doesn't bother having like eye cutouts. It's just, he has little, you know, it's just part of the armor plating, yeah, right, on his face.
Little orbs on there. Yeah.
And so I realized, oh, there's no reason for me to pick out the eyes on this model. So I was originally like knocking it. It's like, oh, if I could do it again, I would fix that. And then I remembered like halfway through that, like, I wouldn't.
Actually, I'm a genius the whole time.
I accidentally painted it correctly and didn't even know. That's how ahead of myself I am.
Yeah. that is funny. Yeah, this is one of those models where I like painting the face on because it's very forgiving because it's not a full face.
Right. Yeah. Anytime they have kind of a cowl, they're kind of letting you off easy in a sense. Unless they put in a ton of eye detail and now you have to like not only do eyes, but you have to pick them out inside of a cowl, in which case I want to have a rude word with the sculptor.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, next up is going to be Bullseye, and this model, I really like this model. I like, you know, the simplicity of it. I like the muscle tonality. I kind of like his pose where he's you know, having the confident point, and then he's got the what are they? They're not, I guess they're throwing knives, right? Throwing daggers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if there's a specific name for that thing, but he's got those like behind him. I think it all is like a really nice ensemble and really emblemizes the character quite well.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. This is actually one of my favorite sculpts in the range. I think they did a phenomenal job on it. I love the fact that they took a simple pose, like the dude's just standing there, right? And they added so much character. Like, you look at it, and it just, like, you can tell the kind of person he is just looking at the sculpt. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing the playful, like, finger guns thing. He's got the knives behind his back. It has this, like, cocky, arrogant, little bit of playfulness. Like, it just, it's the character, right? Like, mm-hmm. You can feel the character in the pose. And to do that with the pose that isn't, like, crazy dynamic, right? He's not doing some crazy flipping around stuff. He, you know, the quote-unquote tactical rock is really just like, you know, a thing for
mystery. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of lifting for one of his feet, that's all it is. And so I'm super impressed by that. And then on top of that, the detail on the model is so well done. Like, one of the things I loved painting him, because it felt like he was just painting himself, because it just, it kind of guides you where to put the highlights and things like that, because the sculpt is just so clean and so like well done.
Yeah, I think that's really funny, because I didn't spend a ton of like, I painted mine, like, I think it was like a one day after like long afternoon paint, but it was fun, and I feel like it had a good outcome, and probably that is probably because the, you know, like you said, it's kind of painting itself. I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's and I again, just like with Daredevil, I credit that to the sculpt. I feel like the sculpt is done in such a way that, like, it's you know, it kind of reminds me of, like, I've noticed every of the Shatterpoint Count Dooku's I've seen, like, the dude's face is, like, immaculate.
Yeah, and that face is really well done.
Yeah, and I credit it too. That's got to be the sculpt, right? Because those are details that would not be easy to paint in on your own. And so the fact that every Count Dooku I see has a face where I'm like, damn, I'm always impressed by it. But I haven't seen the model in person, so I've always kind of chalked it up to it must be the sculpt. I think Bullseye is a good example of that, as I think the sculpt is just so well done that, like, it just lends itself to being easier to paint. Although, interestingly, so Bullseye was one of my first attempts after I had kind of discovered, and I've talked about this before, how I was painting muscles like they're panels. And when I look at Bullseye, because I went into him recognizing that I needed to stop doing that, recognizing that that was a thing I had been doing, and recognizing that it was holding me back as a painter, and it's not an appropriate way to highlight things. Like, orbs should not be painted like they're flat walls. Cylinders should not be painted like they're flat walls. It looks off. It's weird. So I went into it being like, okay, I'm not going to do that. And yet, if you look at him, there are so many aspects of him where I did it. I did exactly that. And so when I look at him, he's a reminder to me that just because you know what's wrong and what needs to be changed doesn't mean you know how to fix it, if that makes sense. And so, I had a friend who... way back in my Games Workshop days, he was playing Imperial Guard, and he took, like, the same squad of, like, 10 guys and would paint them up, and he wouldn't like them, so he would strip them, and he would repaint them. And he kept doing this. Like, it became a running joke that, like, he's painting the same 10 guardsmen. And I'm talking over the course of years, by the way. Mm-hmm. So this was like, and the problem was, like, because I was talking to him about it, and the problem was he would look at the model and he would know he didn't like it, but he wouldn't know, he either wouldn't know what about it he didn't like, or he would know what about it he didn't like, but he didn't have an idea for what to do differently if he repainted it. But that didn't stop him from stripping it and trying over, right? And so the kind of lesson I learned was, just because you know what's wrong doesn't mean you know how to fix it. And I think that's a good thing to keep in mind when you're painting, because even when you start learning those lessons, even when you start getting it in your head that, like, okay, I'm doing this thing and this is making it bad, this is not a thing I should be doing, there's still going to be a process from when you get to that point to where you stop doing it and you understand how to not do it going forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. There's kind of two components I just want to isolate in there. There's one where people always talk about, like, light bulb moments in painting where, like, I learned this thing and it immediately changed my whole, like, it changed how I painted forever immediately without a second of lag, right? I think that very rarely happens, where there's, like, a light bulb moment and then everything changes. And I think that's true with painting and with, you know, essentially everything. It's people kind of describe, like, oh, I had this aha moment and then I immediately changed everything. I don't always think that that's true. I think you have an aha moment, and then what you said, like, you kind of learn how to move towards where you need to be over time. So I think that's really good to point out. And you know, it's less sexy than saying, like, ooh, my aha moment happened, and now immediately, bam, I've gone up 4 power level tiers or whatever. That's just really not how anything works, but that's how it gets communicated a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's great to point out. And then the other thing is kind of realizing these things requires being, like, an active participant in your hobby, like being a little bit reflective, taking a moment to to think about these things and like really understand what you're doing. You know, if you're hobbying like at that point for like just relaxation, you know, you don't need to be like, okay, now like make it a stress inducing thing. Like, okay, now how do I get this done or how do I get this done, etc. Like in the times where you are trying to improve your painting, just keep in mind that you need to be a more active participant in that process. And that can be like, okay, I know where I need to go. Like, why am I not getting there? Kind of understanding and breaking down that step. Or okay, I want to try to do this thing. Oh crap, I didn't do this thing. Like what happened there? Like, you know, there's a couple ways you can kind of be active. You can either do it ahead of time or after the fact, but both are, you know, kind of required to understand what you're doing.
Yeah, and also it's for me, it acts as kind of a reminder to be patient with myself about it. That it's like, okay, so I learned I need to not do that, and I now know I need to not do that. But then when you look back on a model you paint and realize that it's either a habit you fell into or you realize there's some spots where you still did it, recognize that, like, hey, yeah, I did the thing I said I'm going to stop doing, but I immediately noticed it. Like, I looked at the model when it was done, and I immediately saw, like, oh, I did it again. Yeah. And that at least is more progress than you realizing it way later on, right? It's not years later when you're looking at your model and you're like, why did I highlight that, you know, his chest? Like, it's a flat panel. That doesn't make any sense. You know, you're not realizing it years after the fact. You're now recognizing it immediately. And that's part of that process, because the sooner you can recognize you're doing it. Like, for me, for instance, like in Bullseye, you can tell, like, I stopped doing that on his legs. On the legs, I highlighted it in a way that it makes more sense. Like, the muscles actually look like they're kind of cylinders a bit. But then when I got to, like, his upper body, I fell back into those bad habits where it's, like, highlighted like a panel. And so it you can almost see that, like, it rolled out in stages in my head where it's like, oh, these leg muscles are actually cylinders. But then when I didn't recognize that the muscles in the upper body have more of an orb element to them, and so I should paint them more like they're orbs. And so it takes time for that stuff to, you know, once you're consciously aware that it's an issue, it's kind of like that. How is that? That there's like those four quadrants of learning where like you don't know that you don't know. And then you know that you don't know. And then you know that you know. And then you don't know that you know, kind of thing. Like, it's a, or something to that effect. Like, once you get to that point to where you know that you're doing wrong on stuff, it's going to take you a while to get to the point to where you can actually make good use of that information. And so just be patient with yourself. Like, just accept the fact that that's going to take time, and that you, in the meantime, you're going to be putting out stuff where you're going to finish it and you're going to look at it and be like, ah, damn it. And that's just part of it. That's just part of the process. And everybody goes through it. Like, I promise you, that's still happening to all the people that you're following on Instagram, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly still happening to me, so I think it's, yeah. It can be, it kind of gets back to, like, where you are on your painting journey, right? Like, you always assume, like, you know every step that you took on yours, but you're not always, like, intimately familiar with, like, the stumbles and steps that everyone else took on theirs. Yeah, I think it's really good to keep in mind. But otherwise, Bullseye, you know, it's a really cool sculpt, and like, you know, you gotta keep in mind the muscle details. Painting white can be a challenge. This is actually Apothecary White. I'm not big on the, I don't use contrast paints a lot, but Apothecary White makes a really good low effort white. So what I did on my Bullseye was I kind of just had it white from the primer, Yeah. So I like the Zenithal primer and then Apothecary White and then re-highlighted it back up. If you're looking for a very low effort white, I think that that works really well. But yeah, so I mean, white, depending on how much you want to do with that. And then, yeah, that I mean, that's mostly it. It's just blue or white. I suppose you have some decisions, like, because he's depicted with either a dark blue, a light blue. There's a couple of different variations in there. Mm-hmm. Like, you did a more true middle blue, and I did a darker blue.
Yeah, I wanted to go... I wanted mine to feel like it was predominantly, like, on the darker spectrum, but it's also shiny. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was still in my... This was early on when I was really trying to do that, like, bring everything to white kick, and that I think lends itself well to the whole shininess. But yeah, it's there. I mean, there's a ton of different ways you can go about doing the blue, obviously. And then I also think some of the depictions of him, isn't it black and white?
Yeah, black and white.
Yeah, so you could totally just go full grayscale on him if you wanted to. The white in particular, I was still using GW paints when I painted him. Used the, what is it? Is it Corax white? I think it's called. They're kind of,
like,
which
plain white.
Yeah, which I'm personally a fan of. Like, they're
what?
Like, being able to slap down like a coat of white, or well, of a pale gray, let's be honest. And like, most of the trouble of doing white is now done, and now you can.
You're thinking of a different white. Corax white is, yeah. Corax white is their like white. That if it's,
oh, that's their black highlight. Never mind. Yeah. What am I thinking of then? The one that's like their base white.
If you're painting
pure white, they have a base color that they recommend you start with, and it's the same color as like their primer. I could have swore that was Corax.
I mean, Corax white's their primer. Your experience with it is much different than mine. My Corax white is a chalky mess in the pot like 2 days after I bought it.
I didn't have that issue. So what I found early on when I was struggling with white, I found that. And back in the day, when they first revealed these, they were known as foundation paints, and they've been basically renamed to the base paints. And the idea behind them is that there's some different formula where they're like, it's higher pigment, and so you need less of it to get to that color. And it's essentially a pale gray, so it kind of reads as white to the eye, but it's not technically white. And then from there, you can like shade down into grays and then highlight up with like a pure white. And you end up with white that has a lot of detail that still reads as white. And that's what I did for my bullseye. And I think it worked well enough. Of course, if I were doing it now, I wouldn't be using the GW paints. I'd be using scale color most likely. And it would probably be based on, you know, using the tried and trusted, anthracite gray with like some probably Vallejo ice yellow mixed into that, and then some black, and playing around with those to get whites. I found that's a, I don't know, it's a little longer to get there in terms of, because you're having to mix paints and all that stuff, but I find it looks a lot smoother and a lot cleaner. So that's probably how I would go about it now, were I to do the whites. But yeah, that's probably the only part about him that is not the funnest to paint, is because he's got a lot of areas that have like the little lines of detail where you need to get some kind of shading in there. And getting that with white can be kind of annoying.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I would agree with that. Except for using Corax white. I can't condone that.
Hey, I was a young painter, okay?
I mean, if it worked for you, that I'm more impressed than anything. I have not gotten that paint to be particularly successful for me, but that's, you know, that's maybe one of those things. That's a individual type experience.
Could be.
Because I guess similarly, like, some people like really hate the scale 75 paints, and I think that we've both enjoyed using those.
Yeah, I love scale color. I the only thing I'll give scale color is that the coverage on some of the paints is not great. But
yeah,
outside of that, I love it. I feel like the paints feel like cheating because they just blend together better.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Yeah, I mean, Daredevil's like, oh, sorry, not Daredevil. Bullseye is a really cool sculpt, but not too much to talk about on him. So I think we'll just leave it there. So I mean, any final thoughts before we shut it down, close out the podcast?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. All of the pictures we've talked about, pictures of what we worked on, and pictures of the two models we discussed that we painted in the past are in our Discord in an episode gallery. There's one for each of the episodes. So the link to the Discord is in the show notes. If you come hang out in the Discord, you can kind of talk about what you've painted, discuss kind of what you've been working on. Love to see people's painted models. So definitely share that there. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I am waxy_sandwich.
And I am MoriArtist7.
Yeah, and you have a blog where you share a lot of your thoughts.
MoriArtistMinis.wordpress.com.
Yeah, so a lot of great stuff on there. Cool. Well, I hope you join us. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we will talk to you next time.
All right. Keep painting, guys.